You're listening to The Building Code. I'm Tom Houghton.
I'm Paul.
Just Paul. You're like Madonna now. You just moved to one name.
Should I just go to PW?
You should. That would be good.
That's it. It's PW.
PW. Here we go. We'll bring our guest on in just a minute, but first I want to remind you that we're taking BuilderTrend University on the road. We'll be hosting BuilderTrend University in Dallas, Texas on October 3rd, 2019. Anyone is welcome to attend. It's a one-day conference for you and your team to learn more and optimize your usage of BuilderTrend. You can sign up online at buildertrendu.com/Dallas. Paul and I will be there, and we hope to see you there too. Now we'll get started with today's guest. On today's episode of The Building Code, we're joined by the self-proclaimed BuilderTrend super user, Stephen Frosch. He's the builder at Michael Lee Homes based in East Minneapolis, Minnesota. Welcome, Stephen.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Hello, Stephen. You know, it's actually true. So Stephen came to Omaha, call it 3-4 months ago for BuilderTrend University. Yeah. Was that about right?
Yep.
So he and I chatted next to the bar, and he says, you know what? I know how to use everything. I go, you know what? That's impossible. So I had somebody edit his account. He's the only person in 13 years and talking to thousands of clients that literally uses everything in BuilderTrend.
Wow. That's quite the achievement there.
There's a lot of functionality there, and we do use it. We don't maybe use it as deep into each area as we could. Financial area is where we're maybe lacking a little bit, but we do use every bit of the tool to some capacity, and it works well for us.
That's crazy.
That's awesome unique. To hear. Yeah. You
know, even our best users and our longest clients, and this is probably true with every software, right? Like, I don't use all of anything, quite honestly.
Fill in the blank here.
You use all of, like, iPhone stuff. Like, you're a super user.
Yeah.
I don't use it. Just enough to get by is good for me.
Yeah.
And that's true for 99% of our clients, too. And you're going to get value out of whatever percentage builder trend you're using. So
True story.
Shout out to our dev team. Like, you could use one feature and probably make enough money to get your ROI and build a trend. So, but it's really unique to find somebody like Steven and the Michael Lee team that use it all.
Yeah. Let's start there, actually. I'm going to dive in. And so your name is Steven Frosch.
Yes.
But you work for Michael Lee Homes. Or you, yes. You know, so I guess, can you give us a background on the company? Because that seems like...
Who is this Michael Lee?
Yes, who is... Yeah. That's what we really want to know.
Yeah, we actually have a lot of fun with a lot of made-up stories of who Michael Lee is. And Michael Lee is not actually a person. There might be a Michael Lee. I don't doubt people know a Michael
I'm
Lee
sure
out there.
Is.
But there is no Michael Lee in our company. What it actually is we actually have two companies, Michael Lee Homes and Coutinho Homes. And Michael Lee Homes was actually the two middle names of the original owners of the company, Michael and Lee. Hey. Their middle names put together was what it kind of came to be. And it was started in the kind of early 2000s as just a remodeling company. And then in the kind of the downturn in the market, started building new homes at more of an affordable price point because our parent company, Coutinho Homes, builds more luxury homes, and well, people are hurting in the market. So that end of the market kind of dried up pretty quick, you know, so we needed to adapt and change. And that's what allowed us to kind of do that with another brand.
You know, if you actually take our middle names, it would be Michael Lee.
That is not true.
I just thought I'd try.
Don't lie to the listeners. No, they've got to trust in us.
Yeah.
But
that would have been great had that worked.
We'll put in the show notes our middle name home
company.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah. I'll give you a stab at spelling Coutinho Homes.
I'll pass on that stab for $500, Alex.
That's a hard pass.
That's a hard pass.
It actually, how it came about, Coutinho Homes was a misspelling. So it was supposed to be Kootenay Homes after the Kootenay River in Montana. Our original owner, Bob Ebensteiner, back in 1969 when he started the company, was out in Montana. He said, if I can build any homes anywhere near as beautiful as this place is out here, I'll be doing okay. And then when the legal came down, they're like, oh, you misspelled this. And they changed the spelling on the end of it and changed it to Coutinho, and it stuck ever since. So It actually is a misspelling. That's how it started.
I like that story.
You've got two great stories stories. That's pretty fantastic. So tell me about your team there. You know, how many people do you have on it? What does day to day look like? Area of focus?
So we range between 10 and 15 people when we have some more interns during the summer months. But really, the core of our company is right around 10 people. And basically what we have is we have our sales team, and then we have our on-staff drafters here. We do all of our drafting in-house and design in-house for both companies, which allows us to offer full customization at both ends of the market. So we have some stock plans to start from, but no one ever really builds the same house twice. If you want to move a wall 2 feet this way, we have the means to do it. And then we take it with my team, interior designers and field staff to build it and kind of come together with a finished product at the end.
So for Coutinha, I think I'm saying, is that right? What's your price point there? Like, and how many a year?
Coutinha starts at about 800 plus, and that's full custom. And we'll do about a dozen units. You know, we'll kind of sit around that 12 to 15 units a year there. It really kind of depends on, you know, if you have a couple projects that start getting into the multi-million, they take more time and effort, you know, so you're not going to do as many units. It's going to be more of a volume play there.
And then Michael Lee, I assume that's probably
Michael Lee. Yep, Michael Lee does, you know, our average in Michael Lee is in the 400s, which I hate to say it, in Minnesota right now is kind of considered entry-level housing with what we have for permitting and fees, and, you know, so that kind of is not a starter home by any means. I mean, it is a nice product, but that's where we kind of work at in here in the Twin Cities. And we'll do about 30 units. We'll be on pace to do about 40 units of there next year. And that is just a little bit more of a production style build, because you don't have as many options. Obviously, the lower on the price scale you go.
Sure.
So this concept of companies having two different identities and those being two different products, essentially, is actually fairly common in the industry. We hear it a lot with our clients. How internally do you guys manage that? Are we all under this? And what I mean by that is, are you all under the same roof? Do we do company outings together? Are processes shared amongst the two divisions?
Everything's for us, at least, everything's the same. So we don't want to grow. Our goal isn't to be 100, 200 unit a year type of company. We want to stay about actually where we're at, you know, in that, you know, around about 50 units a year. We can still keep our arms wrapped around it and keep good communication with our clients, keep full customization. If someone wants to stop and go, hey, wait a minute, let's entertain this look or style, we can. When you start getting bigger than that, you have to start taking things away from clients just to make the production process work. We still offer full customization all the way through every product we build. And that way, it's the same team members that are really building, you know, $1.5 million house and a $400,000 house. The experience for the homeowner is the same. The difference is the standards and then a lot of the lipstick, you know, a lot of the finishes. That's where you can start spending, you know, more money, you know, between brand to brand. But really, the product is still the same. If we believe, you know, for instance, that this style of house wrap is the right house wrap to use, we use it in both companies. So the building envelope is built the same because it's what we believe in. It's not, you know, it's not based on price. It's more, this is a good quality product that we would, you know, use in our own house.
That's great. And I this is a question that we haven't asked somebody. It's an integral part of both the remodel and new home building process. And so I asked you about process to make sure you guys share the same process between your two companies. But how do you guys manage the taking what the salespeople and estimators have talked about, the scope of work, all the information you gather in the sales upfront piece, and how do you guys manage transferring that accurately to your production team so there's no miscommunication? You know, making sure that every detail that you guys talked about with the client, moving it 2 feet and the finishings and all the things you talked about, go to the production team so there's no miscommunication there.
you know, I think it's easier in the new home production, you know, side of things, because it's based around our standards, you know, so that scope translates a lot easier. But it's, for us, it's our contract is the biggest thing. I mean, our contract sets things in motion. It's what finally made it to that scope. So we have to rely on the contract, which is, you know, for us, for instance, in BuilderTrend, it's both customer facing and, you know, and facing for us. So it's something that is always visible. It's always reviewable. We can always see it. And then the only way to change anything on that is a true change order. Like that way, the transparency stays the same all the way through. We don't use selections to change that. We use hard, just a purchase order to, a purchase agreement to a change order. That's how we manage it. In remodeling, we do remodeling as well. Not a lot of remodeling, but we do some remodeling. That has to be much more hands-on. It requires the salesperson and myself walking the job site and really knowing where the stop and start points are, because it's real easy to have scope creep when you start getting into a remodel. And it's like, oh, and we talked about this. Yeah, you might have talked about it, but we didn't add that a part of our purchase agreement. So, and then at the end of the day, you have to just – sometimes it's not all black and white. Sometimes you just got to look at it from the customer's point of view and put yourself there and go, all right, would I want this done? Like, are you going to just stop painting in the middle of that wall? Well, no, you're not. You're going to chase it to the corner. So sometimes there's things that don't fall perfectly into a box and in the scope, but you got to take care of your customers, you know? And so that's probably the biggest thing, is making sure that the end goal is keeping happy clients, you know, because they'll tell everybody, and that's how you get more business. You know, if you try and nickel and dime them over that $50, not going to be in business very long, you know.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Do you guys internally account for that? Is there some sort of like a budget line item that goes, yeah, you know, we spent an extra hour painting because they said this and we didn't want to make them mad, or is it all just kind of baked in?
You know, there's always a little bit of, you know, play built in for every job, you know, and truthfully, I mean, anybody can tell you that they perfectly accounted for it. They'd be lying to you until they got to the end of the job. I mean, that's just the truth, you know? Right. So when you get to the end of the job, you go, all right, we were successful, and you know what, you're going to win some, you're going to lose some throughout the, you know, out a year. And at the end of the year, you're hoping to be on the right side of that, you know, and have more wins than losses. And you got to make directional changes, you know, along the way from experience. You know, we haven't been around for as many years as we have without having to make some adjustments along the way, you know, and going, hey, for us, the biggest thing is the cheapest bid is never the cheapest bid, because something was forgot, something was missed. They're not going to go that extra mile to take care of you. So, a lot of times we rely on our subs and vice versa to, you know, have a good partnership through it. And we take care of them. They take care of us along the way, and we have happy clients.
That's great.
That is.
I just want to say something that you're probably going to cut.
Oh,
because
wow. Okay.
It's something that I do all the time. And Steven somehow verbally hopped over this something that everybody does. So when we asked him, or you were talking about your remodeling, you go, you know, we also do remodeling, but you didn't say do like I do.
Yeah.
You're like,
no,
also
no, it's
do.
Terrible,
you
right?
said also do, which you somehow said it. Have you ever done that where you, I do that.
You do that.
It sounds
a
like
lot.
Do. I did.
Oh, and it ends up on the editing room floor in my studio.
I didn't
so,
know that. So,
yeah.
So you know that's.
Something. I'm sure.
I, yeah.
That
I'm
is sure. something
he
I
handled
do,
it well. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good. let's transition to your experience with BuilderTrend. I want to know kind of how long you've been using the program. What was that initial kind of starting point looking? What were you looking to solve by adding BuilderTrend to your company?
So we, when I actually came aboard the company about 5 years ago, we did not have any management software. Everything was done old school, traditional paper and pen way. And I believe everything can still be accomplished. It's just BuilderTrend makes things more efficient, you know? So at its core, can we do schedules without BuilderTrend? Sure. You know, it's a much more, you know, pain in the rear end to do, but you can do it. We had a lot of very old systems performing those tasks. So within the first year of coming aboard, I realized we needed to bring technology into the building world that was really lacking about 5-6 years ago for us. So I went to IBS and had my list of, I'm going to go interview all these guys. I was that guy going booth to booth. And I came from the tech world. So, I was very wanting to know the back end of things and know how things operated and functioned. I had worked for Best Buy for a dozen years, so I'm very familiar with a lot of that. And really kind of landed with you guys was the most comprehensive platform, you know, I believed at the time, and I still believe we're right there.
And the coolest guys you met.
Could be.
Paul was looking for an easy win there.
We were young and hip back in 5 years ago.
No, I was talking to a lot of the nerdy guys, you know, trying to figure out the real ends of the things, the nuts and bolts, right, to see if it would work for us. And then, to be honest with you, it was a struggle. It was a struggle getting implemented because – if you don't have somebody championing it on your company, which was me in this instance, you're never going to get across the finish line. And I've had multiple conversations with local builders who are like, we're not going to use that tool, or, you know, we're thinking about doing something different. And I'm like, give me an hour. Let me talk to you about this and see really where your hurdles are. And you got to take it baby steps. Our first need was scheduling. We needed a better tool for scheduling. So we didn't use anything else. We just focused on just scheduling and gave it our all. And then we were like, all right, well, now that's done. Let's sprinkle in this. Let's sprinkle in that. So we slowly grew into each additional tool. And then each one along the way, it's kind of like, we should have been using that for a while now. Like, why haven't we? But if you try and take it all on at once, it's drinking out of a fire hose. It's too much. And you're just not going to be successful at it. Take the one or two categories that you need the most help in, and then just you have to just force it to happen almost a little bit. There's hurdles, you know, but it's doable. And then the other side of it is much, much more efficient and better to work with.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I think anybody who's ever onboarded with us would say the exact same thing. All of our listeners who are clients probably have the same challenges, maybe going through those challenges right now.
Yeah, let's kind of talk about that onboarding process. And, you know, again, you obviously use the program, like you said, maybe not in depth everywhere, but you're using it across the entire span.
Yep.
So was that an initiative that you just brought in, or is that something that, you know, you talked about with your coach? How did you learn? I guess what I'm trying to drive at is, how did you learn the program the way you did? Was it through just experience and like trying things out? Was it through the coach?
That's probably my biggest way was going through just hands-on. It's just how I learn how to use stuff. But I know our coach has been a great asset for our bookkeeper here, as well as our interior designer, who wanted to get a little bit deeper into each category, you know, with selections and with the financials. So I know they have definitely used the coach on a more regular basis. Not to say that I haven't, but a lot of it is just, you got to try it. You got to get into it. You got to throw something against the wall and see what sticks. And you're not going to know. You could put the best plan in front of you and then put it out there and go, well, that was garbage. It's no different than building. I mean, we try new materials. We try new processes. We try, hey, let's move this work stage in front of that work stage. And then it's unforeseen, like, oh, you didn't think about this. Nope, sure didn't. But now I can see it. Like, I'm not going to do that again, you know. And that's a lot of, you know, I think builders, you know, we don't adopt things in the tech world very quickly. But a lot of the mentality we're already doing every day with problem solving in the field. So you're going to do the same thing with the software to find what's going to work specifically for you.
It's good.
It's great advice. That's why Steven is a super user. But also, on a serious note, you're also a part of another exclusive group called our Product Influencers, right?
Yes.
So we launched this probably I don't know,
a year
12 months ago. Yeah.
A year ago, yeah.
Hey, are you, yep. Our product influencers are, out of our 15,000 clients and 800,000 users, what we wanted to do is identify a variety of companies, not just one segment of home builders or remodelers or specialty contractors, commercial. We wanted a wide variety, and we wanted users that, for lack of a better term, knew what they were talking about. So we could go to them with new features, new functionality, and say, test this out. Tell us where our holes are, right? Just like you said, like, whoops, nope, didn't think of that. Thank you for that, before it goes to the masses. So if you want to be a product influencer, reach out to your coach. You can find them on the app. We'll see if you qualify.
There is a qualification process there.
If not, we'll get you the training to get there. We'll give you a roadmap to success.
Exactly.
But we're adding to that list, and that list is, or that group of people is very important to us, obviously for feedback and our development. But I want to say thank you for being an influencer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I want to know one thing, because you have a unique background, Stephen, that we talked about. I think you some of your family owns this company, right?
Correct. Okay. My father.
Yep. Your father owns it. So out of college, where'd you go? Why didn't you jump on right away? And how did you get this tech background?
Growing up, actually, we were always told you'll never be a part of the company, which was a good thing. You have to, there's an inherent level of, nepotism or, issues that come along with family dynamics, so it was never, you're never going to just be a part of the company just because, you share the same last name. So I actually started working for Best Buy in high school in the retail stores, and then worked my way up into corporate headquarters is based here in the Twin Cities. And there was plenty of opportunities there, and was able to make my own stamp somewhere else before it just made sense. It was a phone conversation after I was working nights and weekends, just helping out coming out of the recession. We went from, before the recession, we had almost 80 employees. We had on staff framers, trimmers, everybody was on staff. Now it's a different world. Now it's very much a subcontracted world. So we went down to 2 employees. So coming out of it, it was helping out the family business, and working nights and weekends and doing, I do all of our marketing. So all of our website, all of our handouts, everything that's all my handiwork on that stuff. So, that's how it started. And then it just kind of made sense. And nothing against corporate America or anything there. It just, it was the opportunity to do something that, I had grown up around my whole life, and it made sense to make the switch. And I thought I was ready for it. I sure as hell wasn't. There was a lot of things learned in that first couple of years, and you just adapt and learn and keep moving forward, but that's really, it was never, you were never going to work for the company growing up. You had to go find your own path somewhere else. And I think that's a very good way to do it. I don't think that it's for everybody, I know there's a lot of second generation remodelers, builders, third generation, and however you do it is definitely unique to you, but it worked for us to do it the way we did.
That's a cool story.
That's great.
Little known fact, Best Buy is headquartered there, but also Target.
Yes.
Lots of retail.
A lot of retail there.
Going on in Minnesota.
That's right.
There's a lot of Fortune 500 headquarters here in the Twin Cities.
There you go. Cool. Have you been to the Twin Cities?
Of course I have.
It's close to Omaha.
You were just there. You were just here. How was it?
Me or you?
No, you were, because you talked about that in the previous episode. Oh, that's right. Just went up to.
I went from my daughter's gymnastics.
Yeah. Mall of America. Remember, we talked about that.
I was born in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Oh.
That's not a joke.
Fun fact.
My dad went to chiropractic school up there. So I hadn't been back in 20 years. Holy cow.
Wow, that's a long time.
The downtown Minneapolis scene, the bars, restaurants. I went to a pizza place that was just killer. Great culinary scene there. Minnesota State Fair just happened. World famous fair for all their fried foods.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or is that Iowa?
It's, no, they've got lots of fried
there's
foods.
Something, there's something new fried on a stick every year.
Yeah, they've got all the foods.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
Do you go to the Minnesota State Fair?
I avoid it now.
You avoid it now?
I avoid it now. I'm sorry. The truth is, the kids go with the grandparents and have a good time. It's a lot of people, a lot of people.
Yeah. It's one of the most famous ones there are. Yeah,
A buddy of mine actually works on a news station up there and does a lot with the fair at KSTP.
Oh yeah. Everybody. Yeah. And so every broadcast is at the fair. I mean, everybody has a full, they broadcast live from there for the entire, whatever 2 weeks that the fair is open.
Yeah.
They basically move and set up shop at the fair the whole time.
Well, Nebraska's got a good fair. Iowa State Fair, world famous, and Minnesota. That is linear.
It's a trifecta right there.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there's like a,
it's kind of
a right triangle.
Next summer, Paul and Tom on this road.
There you go.
We do the fairs.
Building Code Live.
From the
at
fair.
At the fair.
Right in the pigsty.
It's a cheap setup there.
Building Code. Okay.
Steven.
This is great.
Yeah, I think we've covered a lot of great stuff here. So we'll wrap up. Steven, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today and sharing your insight and knowledge. We, of course, love that you're so bought into BuilderTrend, and we hope others will feel encouraged by your story today.
Thank you. And we love that you're on our product influencer list. If the listeners want to jump on there and you think you can make the cut, this is a challenge. Reach out to your coach. We'll tell you. You can find both of the websites for Steven's company on the show notes. And I want to say, you had mentioned marketing in just a little bit ago. You handle the marketing. They got a nice little Instagram page, over 3,000 followers. You're getting there. It's building. Go give them a follow. We got to follow each other.
Yeah. It takes a village. Yeah.
It's a community of followers.
Yes.
Like that's
so who's leading? Everyone. Everyone's leading and following at the same time.
Check it out in the show notes. Kayla's going to put it all up there. And Steven, thank you again. We appreciate you.
Thank you guys.
Want to share a suggestion for a future guest? Have a question about BuilderTrend that you'd like us to discuss or a topic that you'd want us to cover on the podcast? Let us know by calling and leaving us a message at 402-596-6437. That's 402-596-6437. And who knows, you'll maybe hear yourself on the podcast. Love what you heard? Don't forget to rate and subscribe to our podcast so you can hear from more guests that will benefit your business. Also, please check out our show notes page for more information on what we discussed on this episode. You can find it at buildertrend.com/podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on The Building Code.
Appreciate you.